an anti-ESG bill's hefty price tag. Property tax relief gets complicated, plus a poll on Indiana schools, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 10th, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, those opposed to a House Republican priority bill suspected it would mean less pension money for state employees. But a new estimate by the Indiana Public Retirement System shows it would be a significant loss in returns, about $6.7 billion, that's billion with a B, over the next decade. The bill aims to cut ties with banks that have certain ESGs, or environmental, social, and governance policies. These are policies that consider the environmental or social impacts of their investments. Those in favor of the bill say these banks are discriminating against Indiana businesses like coal companies and firearm makers. A recent study commissioned for the climate advocacy group The Sunrise Project shows these laws reduce competition for state bond issues. That drives up interest and can cost taxpayers millions. House Speaker Todd Houston says his team has met with NPRS to address the bill's hefty price tag.
We'll find the right landing spot. You're going to see that bill next week, and as we continue conversations, we're going to get that bill across the finish line.
The bill is expected to come up in the House Ways and Means Committee next week. Is this an idea worth pushing forward? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is there a way to make this bill work?
No, absolutely not. It's a terrible idea. I assume it came out of one of those ALEC conferences that the right-wing Republicans go to and get their little marching orders about what they're supposed to do. But what about the traditional Republican attitude of let the market handle this? I mean, first of all, anybody dealing with the pensions have been the obsession of the Indiana Senate, okay? And they've been paying it down at a very advanced rate, and this is going to put them backwards, number one. Number two, they have a fiduciary duty to those pensioners to maximize the return, and this is flying in the face of that. Who's going to handle the lawsuits that come out of this? And who's going to come up with the list of who's not acceptable? Are we going to let Todd Rokita, who's already shown that he uses his office to advance his own ideological agenda at the expense of the law, going to have him do that?
I believe it's Treasurer Daniel
Elliott. Yeah, but he gets to enforce it.
He gets to enforce it. Along with Todd Rokita or the Attorney General's office. Mike, we heard some Indiana businesses come to the House committee hearing and say, hey, you know, as it pointed out in the piece, gun sellers, coal companies who were saying, we're having trouble getting insurance or getting investment because, you know, companies don't want to invest in our companies anymore. Is that a problem that needs solving from the state level?
That is a real problem. This isn't a solution in search of a problem. There are tangible examples of this in Indiana, and those are a couple that you just mentioned. But it's really hard. I mean, think about Eli Lilly and Cummins and these companies that invest heavily in communities. You know, they take foundation dollars, which are for Eli Lilly is stock, right? Yeah. And they invest in programs they deem benefiting the community in the way that fits their philosophy as a company, which by all readings is very liberal. And so it starts getting tricky. And I know that these companies that have come in and there are companies, banks are worried about kind of the slippery slope too. And I get that. If the state wants to just very narrowly focus on, or the legislature wants to very narrowly focus on, like they do in the Senate bill, which is far less controversial and less impactful, I would assume, financially, because that's the largest fiscal I've ever seen on a bill in my entire 25 years in the State House.
It used to be bigger than the budget back in the day.
You may want to look at the Senate bill as guidance for when they get ready to send this House bill over.
And raise something that I asked Speaker Houston yesterday, which is, I don't think businesses are in the business of losing money. I don't know many businesses who are. So if they're doing these things, it's because
They at least think they're not going to lose a bunch of money. So isn't that just the free market, and isn't the Republican thing to do to let them let it play out on its own? If it's going to hurt the companies that aren't investing, then it's going to hurt them.
A lot of companies, Fortune 500 and others, have noticed that being sustainable and being a good corporate citizen is good for business, not only in the attraction of investment, but in terms of just
employees,
the relationship with employees, the ability to recruit and retain workers, and a customer-company relationship as well. Mike makes a good point. The Dow Jones company, or a subsidiary of that company, every year, for how many years, comes out with among the 6,000 publicly traded companies with a certain stock value, you know, the top 100. Well, guess what? Cummins is 20-something, Lilly's 60-something. So these are companies that most of the, you know, traditionally we've said, good job, thank you for being good corporate citizens. Never mind that they are also two of the biggest private employers in our state.
Anthem, too.
Anthem, too.
Yeah.
And if you look at the companies on that list, they tend to be the companies that would attract investment anyway. Apple, Microsoft. I mean, they are companies that are doing something to attract money. You know, clearly it's not just about the highest return here, because if you had, hypothetically, some kind of fund that invested only in ammunition and firearms, tobacco and drugs used in executions. If I could be, you'd have people that wouldn't say, that's fine, you know, let it be. But because this is somehow, and last point, though, it's not just hypothetical. Now, the budget analysts are a lot smarter about these things than I am, but you can look at what's already happened. History is a great guide.
Yeah.
Texas, where $500 million.
In the first year
hit, according to a study by University of Pennsylvania, which is Donald Trump's alma mater, so they must know
what they're talking about.
But I want to ask about this too, which, because it was raised, you know, we had coal companies who said we're having trouble. But what people also pointed out was investing in these companies, they've been fluctuating pretty wildly because the world is what it is. People are using less and less coal. I mean, if you look at every energy company in this country, their projections on how much coal they're using is going to go down significantly.
Yeah,
so
is
investing in these companies the smart financial decision?
Yeah, and that's some of what some of the Bankers Association is saying is, you know, some of these decisions are not on one thing. Like, some aren't, you know, we're not investing in that because it's a volatile industry,
right,
not because it's one we disagree with politically. And obviously, this bill goes so much farther. It also impacts the investment managers that you can use. So we're going to have fewer investment managers to manage the state's portfolio, less competition for that. And the Senate provision, for people who don't understand, is more just sort of a statement of, you know, we want you to only focus on returns. But it doesn't require divestment. It doesn't protect specific industries. So it's just a lot less stringent.
And I'll say, you know, I asked, again, Speaker Houston yesterday, are you, you know, when he said we're going to make changes to the bill to get it through, and I said, are you aiming for pretty much what the Senate has got, because that thing's moving along just fine? And he said no. He said they think they want to go farther in the House. I don't know how you're going to do that without costing the state a lot of money. I guess we might find out.
Not fiscally responsible.
Property tax relief legislation got a lot more complicated this week as a House committee tried to soften the blow such relief would have on local government and school budgets.
The original proposal was simple: create an additional homestead tax credit and reduce the cap on how much homeowners have to pay on their property taxes for a few years. The latest proposal is anything but simple. That additional homestead tax credit is gone. The reduction in the property tax cap is cut in half. The bill increases homeowners' and renters' deductions on Hoosiers' income taxes by $1,000 each. Local governments have a new option to create their own property tax relief. Here's bill author, Republican Representative Jeff Thompson.
This thing has lots of moving parts. I consider none of them real, real drastic. Some may.
It's not yet clear how much the average homeowner would save under the new proposal, and it's also not yet clear how much the plan would cost local governments and schools. The bill next heads to the House floor for further work.
Mike O'Brien, is this just what happened this week? Is this a great example of why figuring out property tax relief is so hard?
Yeah, it's really hard. It's particularly hard because what they're trying to do is they're trying to soften the blow, a blow that already happened. You know, so the ability to deliver politically on this is really limited. And Jeff Thompson's right. There's a lot of moving parts. You touch one tax dollar here, and it affects all these people to the benefit of the homeowner, right? Fair enough. But think how you're going through. So you're paying last year's assessment this spring and fall. Your mortgage company is going to recalculate your escrow based on the change in market value. Then a year from now, we're going to have some credit that is going to you're going to drop that 1% tax rate on your assessed value to 0.9, then 0.5, and or 0.5 or 0.95 in the new one, and then 9.75. You're not going to feel that really,
right?
Because your bill's going to be moving anyway.
I mean,
the market's going to continue to impact your value probably downward.
And then
they're trying to solve the problem they created by trying to solve the other problem, which is what do we do to local government and schools?
Well, and also, like Jeff Thompson talked about, the original fiscal impact of this bill to local governments was significant. I have no idea what the fiscal impact of it is now, neither does he entirely, because we haven't gotten the note on that. But he often talked about, in the original committee hearing, Jeff Thompson talked about, it's not a decrease to local governments and schools. It's a decrease in the increase. They're going to get a lot of money this year because property tax values have gone up so much, and so will property taxes.
You have to net it out, is what he's
right.
saying.
Right. But it seems to me the same is going to be true for...
It's hard to compare all of that.
But it's also going to be true for what you're trying to do for homeowners. Like next year, if these changes take effect, my property taxes still might go up. They just might not go up as much as they otherwise would have. How the heck am I going to notice that?
Well,
it's like getting politically blamed for the gas tax. You're not feeling the gas tax.
Right.
Right?
Because the
numbers
they
doing
do
this.
Feel property taxes. I mean, Bart Peterson can testify to that.
Sure.
The problem with this is, you know, 10 years ago, the average house value was $134,000. Now it's $211,000. That's a pretty big jump. And the other problem is, well, twofold. First, we have a part-time legislature. So when this started coming out last May, it was too late for the legislative session to do anything about it. And the second big problem is we're over-governmented. We have 1,000 townships with charter schools. We have about 400 school corporations. On top of that, we have 115 cities and 92 counties.
Yeah.
New York, which is, three times the size, has 42. And the problem is each... time
really a channel of Mitch Daniels here.
Well, I think we ought to dust off the
Kernan Shepherd's
but
coming back.
The bottom line is every time you tweak it someplace, it has this ripple effect that is impossible to calculate because we have too darn many governments.
Cherish Pryor said something in the committee yesterday which I liked, which was she said the place that we need to get to is to where everybody, and it's the three groups of people, it's local government, schools, and homeowners, property taxpayers. Everybody needs to hurt a little bit. Because if one group is really happy, then something bad has happened for the other two. Is that where lawmakers need to... Is that the sweet spot?
I mean, I guess. But we also have to remember...
We're
talking all about residential homeowners. Remember, there are other property taxpayers. Yeah. And when you mess with the pie, it impacts
it
and shifts
to
others. Yeah. So whether businesses will end up paying more.
Or farmers.
Also, the decrease in the increase. I just want to point out that those local governments... Like, the reason they're getting an increase is because their costs have gone up. Their utilities, their employee pay. So it might not
inflation
be.
Inflation that hurts us.
Correct.
Hurts them
it's hitting them as well. That's why they're getting more.
And you've got to remember, too, that the increase in values of homes is not uniform.
Right.
And there are places in this state where the values have gone down substantially.
Nikki just pointed out, we're only talking about homeowners, not talking about businesses. We're not talking, importantly, in some parts of this state, about the ag community.
Mm-hmm.
Representative J.D. Prescott, who represents a particularly rural community, nearly voted against that property tax relief bill yesterday. He was basically like, I'll vote yes to move it along because, you know, I'm a Republican and I'm supporting the chairman, but I'm real worried about the folks in my community taking the brunt of anything you do to help homeowners. Is that going to complicate this even further and make it hard to find something that everybody's going to be able to vote for, at least enough to get a majority in both chambers?
It's already a Rubik's Cube. You know, there's just, you can't do it without this way, this direction. It's multidimensional challenges. You're exactly right. You press the balloon here and it pops out somewhere else. I mean, we're under the illusion, I guess, that somehow government services are the only, and the providers of government services are somehow the only sector of the U.S. economy or the global economy that does, where that doesn't see significant increases in the cost of doing business. You know, so there's a notion we can cut, give back taxes, we can cut taxes, we can do this. Well, but at the same time, as a state, we're pushing quality of life. We want to have good schools. We want to have good roads. We want to have great parks. We want to have trails connecting those parks. Government services cost money. And that's not a, that doesn't make it feel any better when you open your tax bill or when you see what's come out of your account. And nor does it help if I were to point out that Indiana pays, Hoosiers pay so little, generally speaking, in terms of property taxes compared to lots of other states. Yeah. Again, doesn't make you feel any better, but if, maybe if you have a cousin in New York, New Jersey, or call them up.
Massachusetts.
Or call them up and hear them bellyache, and maybe you'll feel better. The shot in front of them will give you a little bit.
But really, the bottom line of all of this is all of this discussion, all of the hard work that's going to go in this and the heartache that's going to go into this for lawmakers, and none of it will help the bills that people are about to get in the mail.
That's exactly right.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, should Indiana lawmakers pass property tax relief that helps homeowners but hurts local government and school revenues? A yes or B no. Last week we asked you whether Jim Banks will be Indiana's next U.S. Senator. Just 32% of you say yes, 68% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. That was Indiana's next U.S. Senator, not just the primary. But a new state, in the primary, it seems to be 100, yeah. A new statewide poll shows most parents approve of their child's school. More than 3,000 parents responded to the survey conducted by the Indiana Department of Education and Gallup last year. From WFYI's education desk, Lee Gaines reports the findings were presented at a recent State Board of Education meeting.
88% of surveyed parents said they're satisfied with their child's school. Only 2% of parents said that they both know and disapprove of the subjects taught in their child's school. Board member Scott Bess emphasized the finding.
That 2% is very loud, very organized, and they get a lot of airplay.
Conservative activists and politicians have repeatedly claimed schools are indoctrinating kids. Bess said those views do not appear to be widely shared.
Parents who are satisfied, they're not yelling and pounding on tables and showing up. And I think this really illustrates that point well.
The survey data also shows that parents are concerned about school safety and the affordability of post-high school education.
Nikki, do these poll numbers square with what we see happening at the State House?
Yeah, I don't think so, but I also think that's to be expected. I mean, when things happen at the State House, like anything in life, like I have a million friends who have kids, almost all of them are extremely pleased with their educational systems. They're not taking work off to go testify about how great things are, you know? I mean, that's just the way it works. And so I'm not, you know, it doesn't match what we're seeing at the State House, but I also wouldn't expect it to.
Yeah. But that's also a difference between the people who show up to testify and the policies that lawmakers are actively pushing, apparently for what seems like a relatively small number of people. So at any point, does this come back to bite them if they make a bunch of changes that nobody wants?
It does fly in the face of the argument that's put forth by, for instance, advocates of partisan school board elections. The notion is that people don't like what's being taught in their schools. They don't like the way that boards are being run. There's no input. No one's listening. They don't like schools. They're headed down the wrong path to,
perdition.
That's probably a good word to say. But when you say that, and try to make the argument that there needs to be this kind of wholesale change because what we have now isn't working. And then you hear 88%. Show me a politician that has an approval rating of 88% that doesn't exist. And so I think that, and the number, if you touched on this briefly, but if you look at the number of individuals who talked about the curriculum, basically, what's being taught, and there's dissatisfaction with that, caused me to raise my eyebrows, that was, I think, 2% who were dissatisfied. But I think there was up to like 7% that were dissatisfied but didn't know what the curriculum
was.
So there's that 5% who essentially said, I really don't like what's being taught, but I have no clue what's being taught. That's an alarm. That group needs some special help because, they're just angry. angry people, it seems. But I also, I'm glad you brought this up, because we addressed this topic on this week's Indiana Lawmakers, where we discussed this very issue in terms of partisan school boards, which airs on many of these same public broadcasting stations.
We talked, I think it was last year, about Republican lawmakers who send out these constituent surveys. This is not that. This is an actual official, like, scientific poll. Yeah. But they send out their constituent surveys, and we found on the gun issue, overwhelmingly their constituents said, don't do what you're doing, and they didn't care. Should we add anything having to do with schools to that list of things? They don't care what the constituents think?
And abortion.
And abortion, too. Yeah.
That was already obviously on the list.
You can't compare those two things. One is a deeply held, like, foundational conservative belief,
right? But is education becoming that at the State House?
This set of issues, these school board elections or CRT and these new things, we know it's a small out group, but small out groups are what influence legislation and influence politicians. The people that are quietly satisfied but maybe still go vote, but they're not really engaged, but they do go vote, there's not a lot of risk there. There's a heck of a lot of risk if you're a politician in this 20% of the base.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works everywhere.
It's not 20%. It's not 20% of the base. It's 20, if it's 20 at all, it's 20% of the Republican base.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, okay. But what they're doing, they don't care what voters want. And they don't support public education. All those increases in both vouchers and the charter schools, despite the fact that there's absolutely no evidence that students do better in either of those situations. But they pump the money in there, and they keep talking about choice. They're great on choice, except if it's your body. Then you're not supposed to have any choice.
There was a moment in a committee hearing this week that I enjoyed, which was on the partisan school boards bill, where somebody got up and talked about how he has, I think it was like 7 or 9 kids, and none of them go to public schools, but he's very upset about the public school board. Indiana Republican Congresswoman Victoria Spartz has announced that she will not run for re-election or any office in 2024. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Ben Thorpe reports Spartz was first elected to Congress in 2020 and has only served in elected office at any level since 2017.
Spartz said that she has decided that she will step back from politics after 7 years of holding an elected office. Being a working mom is tough, and I need to spend more time with my 2 high school girls back home, Spartz wrote. Spartz was seen as a potential candidate for the U.S. Senate seat that will be vacated by Republican Senator Mike Braun's run for governor.
John Schwanis, how surprising is this?
Very surprising. I thought this is somebody, we've talked about her as a potential U.S. Senate candidate, that she seemed to have her eye on the prize moving up. So very surprising. So I blew that prediction, if anybody had asked. But I'm going to make another prediction.
We all kind of
I'll make
that
one prediction. I'll stick with, and I think will become true. We talk about open seats, how rare they are. Now, it hasn't happened in the U.S. Senate seats, so we'll put that one aside for a minute. But this seat, because it's such a certain Republican seat. Remember when Spartz won this seat after Susan Brooks vacated it, she did it by 4 or 5 percentage points. But since then, the maps have been redrawn and she won by 20 plus. It is solid Republican. So you will see 12, 13, 14, 15, maybe 20, I don't know how many Republicans line up to try to get this seat.
We're going to see that in a couple of districts, because with Jim Banks running for the U.S. Senate, that his congressional seat, which is even more solidly Republican.
Right.
I mean, the most interesting races in the May 2024 primary could be those 2 congressional seats, could they not?
Absolutely. And I'll add to you, I was shocked. I mean, literally a couple of weeks before, she was talking about running for U.S. Senate. And then we went from not only that to I don't want to be here at all. That came a couple of days after she was really against Speaker McCarthy on some committee issues, so I don't know if that played into it, but definitely shocking.
Yeah, how surprised are you with this move?
It's ridiculous, really. I mean, she had to have made up her mind before she ran. I mean, the excuse she gave is their children are of high school age. Did that suddenly happen? I mean, she'd forget their birthdays, or what happened in between? I mean, it's, frankly, she's anything since she's been there, so
I do
it really
want to ask
is a
about
big
the timing
yawn.
Of this. Why say this now, of all times?
Well, I mean, she's kind of hosed either way, right? So she waits. It's like, well, you close the door to people that were making other decisions.
You could wait a year.
People at that caliber, so go.
I guess, but if you were asking about the Senate seat, I guess she answered that question and answered the other one, too.
Wow.
Finally, Sunday is the NFL's big game, Super Bowl 57, with the Kansas City Chiefs facing off against the Philadelphia Eagles. Mike O'Brien, who have you got?
I'm an NFC guy, so I'm going to stick with the Eagles, I think.
How about you, Andy?
I frankly don't care, but I like Philadelphia, so I'll go with Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, I like the city. Nikki, this is a tough one for you.
I refuse to participate in this conversation now.
Nikki, for honestly, those of you who aren't aware, is a huge Cincinnati Bengals fan.
The fact is, I really do enjoy Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, even though I'm still hurting massively from that AFC Championship loss.
This is the weekend of the big game, which is why I'm going with Indiana over Michigan.
Amen.
And speaking of the Hoosiers, I use a huge record-setting victory over Iowa yesterday. The women set an attendance record. That was
They're
a heck
good.
Of a game.
They are really
two in the country.
Good.
Yeah, that's. I'm looking forward to the tournament for that. I'm torn on this one. My little brother is a huge Eagles fan and has been for a long time. But I went to college in Missouri, and I have a lot of friends who are from Kansas City. I think it's going to be one of those where I'm going to watch the game and end up rooting for somebody, and I'll just find out.
You're going to root for whoever wins is what you're going to
well,
do.
Well, yeah.
I hope both teams have fun.
I will tell my little brother that I'm rooting for the Eagles. I don't know whether that will actually play out in real time, but I just hope it's a good game. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/iwir or on the PBS video app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.